News Talk 590 WVLK. Finally, Friday morning. Scott Johnson in for vacationing Jack Patty. Brought to you this morning by Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite grass seed, the seed everybody's talking about. Available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. All right, here's the thing about people. If a man calls a woman ugly, he will become a pariah, at least to those who understand that almost every woman is beautiful somewhere inside. If a man calls another man ugly, they will be best friends for life. Woman calls another woman ugly, there's going to be hell to pay. That ties into our case this morning. It is American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is here. Good morning.
Hey, Scott. You are one of the ugliest guys I ever met.
And that's why we get along. See, I told you, folks. I told you. That's the way it works. Introduce the panel this morning, if you would.
Okay. Well, as you and Jack frequently say, we've got the cast of thousands in here, or a studio audience, with us today to talk about a very interesting case that involves somebody who had a modeling career. That's where she was going, and had her face slashed by somebody else. And so we'll get into that later. The prosecutor in that case was Tracy Kinnear, and Tracy has been with our office for some time and did a wonderful job on that case. And Tracy, we're glad you're here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning back. I'm not going to say you're ugly. Also is the detective who handled this case. His name is Franz Frederick Wolf, a member of the Lexington Division of Police Homicide Unit.
You can't ever let him know too much about you. It just becomes a weapon.
Well, what happened? I call him Frank. It's just easier that way. And what do you call me, Frank?
Raul on occasions.
Right.
Oh, that works.
So
yeah.
There's no respect whatsoever. And he's here to talk about the investigation. And Mary Houlihan, who worked very closely with the victim in this case and is the director of our victim services operation at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, is here. Mary?
Morning, Mary.
Morning.
Glad you're here again.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about how this whole thing came about, Franz. Grab that microphone and talk into it. I'll do that so Scott doesn't have fuss at you and tell you it's a directional mic and you got to be close.
Right on top of it.
Okay, well, this incident happened in January of last year, on the 15th of January of 2013. And the victim in this case was going to her place of employment in Fayette Mall when she was approached by two other females, actually an ex-girlfriend of the victim's current boyfriend. And she was attacked.
Now, wait a minute. That's like talking about family relations. The girl that was the victim in this case was going to work. She had a boyfriend that used to be the boyfriend of one of the women that attacked her, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And the ex-girlfriend, the defendant in this case, attacked the victim as she was walking through the common area in front of the victim's place of employment.
This was at Fayette Mall.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And during this altercation, well, a fight happened, and the victim was cut by the suspect on her face very severely.
Well, tell us a little bit about, okay, so you get the call. How do you get the call? You're a member of the homicide unit. Nobody died.
Nobody died. The homicide unit, in addition to investigating homicides, also investigates robberies and serious assaults here in Fayette County. Due to the nature of this incident, the homicide unit was assigned the case, and I was the investigator that was asked to investigate the situation.
I want to stop for just a second, Scott, mm-hmm. and because the homicide unit at Lexington Police Department is probably, I hate to say this in front of Franz, but is one of the best homicide units in the country. They typically, the clearance rate or the percent of murders that are solved is about 50 to 65% nationwide. Our group here in Lexington, of which Franz is part, last year in 2013 solved 100%.
Wow!
And are typically in the mid 90% range anyway. So when you so you're doing a good job, at least the rest of them are doing a great job, Franz. What? Tell me about what happens when the homicide unit is called out for in this case it was a assault.
What happens typically, the incident occurs and the patrol officers that are working that day respond to the scene and make contact with the individual in this case that was hurt or assaulted, and the patrol officers began to conduct an initial investigation, and oftentimes we'll call the homicide unit, the robbery homicide unit, out to assist in the investigation and to take the investigation from them and further the investigation in hopes to find additional information to prosecute, locate, and identify the suspect and prosecute the case in court.
Okay, so you were called out. What we're going to do, and Scott, one of the things we're trying to do is on the radio, mm-hmm. be able to let people visualize what's going on here.
Sure.
So, and so what's going to happen is Christy McStay, who is with our office, is going to be doing Instagrams of photographs of all of the people that are participating today, as well as the victim in this case, because her face was slashed. She knows that we're going to talk about her. She knows we're going to be putting her
picture
on.
You've got her permission,
sure.
too. Okay.
And so if you want to see what we're talking about, the Instagram address is, I guess that's what you call it, is Ray the DA Lex. All one word.
Ray the DA Lex. Because when you think of social media and right on top of the curve, you think of Ray Larson.
I do. Yeah. Okay, so
Franz, I know how they dragged you into that, Ray.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's kicking and screaming. Franz, okay, so tell us what happens here. Tell us about the investigation.
First, myself and other detectives interviewed the victim in this case, and this was a unique case because the victim was aware of who at least one of the suspects in the case that attacked her. She was aware of that person's identity. There was some effort to solidify that identification. A lineup was produced and shown to the victim, and she immediately identified the victim, Nicole Bewley, as the individual that attacked her in the mall and used a bladed instrument to...
What did she use?
In later interviews, we learned that she used a straight razor blade to make a series of lacerations on her cheek.
Ooh. That's heavy-duty slicing.
Yeah. That is slicing. All right, we'll find out more about this case. We've identified the suspect. We'll see where it goes from there. Franz Wolf is with us, and Ray Larson, Tracy Kinnear, and Mary Houlihan waiting in the wings. If you have a question or a comment, let us know at 253-5959, *590 on AT&T. Toll free, 877-777-0. It's American DA Live. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is here. Tracy Kinnear and Mary Houlihan from his office. Lexington Police Detective Franz Wolf with us. We are talking about the case of the Commonwealth versus Nicole Bewley. We got to the point where the victim in this case, an aspiring model whose face got slashed in the attack, has identified the suspect in a lineup. Where do we go from here, guys?
Franz, so one of the things that's become pretty important these days in investigations is surveillance video. Did Fayette Mall have surveillance video that you were able to get a hold of?
They did not. However, we were lucky that this happened in a very public place, and we contacted Fayette Mall and learned that they did not have surveillance video in the common areas of their building. However, we contacted numerous retail businesses that were in the immediate vicinity of where the assault happened and learned that they had their own independent surveillance equipment inside their stores, and further learned that some of those cameras captured some images from the common areas in the hallway or public areas of the Fayette Mall. So we made contact with the IT people, with the police department, and with these independent retail.
Those are the techno geeks that come do that computer stuff.
Those are those experts in that video surveillance. Yes.
Yes.
The techno geeks. And we were able to get video surveillance that was relevant to this assault in this case from several different retail stores in, inside the Fayette Mall.
Oh, okay. Now, the Tracy. Well, first of all, what did you find on this?
In interviewing the victim's employer at the retail store where she was employed, and looking at the recovered surveillance video, we learned that Nicole Bewley and a second female had come to the area of the business where the victim was employed and sat on some couches and chairs that were in the middle of the public area, the hallway of the mall, and stayed there for a number of hours, it appeared, waiting on the victim to arrive to her shift at the Fayette Mall.
Okay, now I want to ask Tracy, since you're the super-duper prosecutor on this mm-hmm. case, why would that be important in prosecuting an assault case?
Well, because we knew and we were correct that the defendant ultimately was going to try to
prosecuting an assault case.
Well, because we knew and we were correct that the defendant ultimately was going to try to claim some to turn the tables on the victim and claim some type of self-defense. The defendant in this case ended up saying that she was just strolling through the mall. She was expecting a child, although she was approximately 2 weeks pregnant, so it certainly wasn't visible to anyone. But she tried to make it sound like she was this poor, unsuspecting pregnant woman just walking through the mall, and she ends up in this encounter, like it just happened by happenstance. But thanks to that video surveillance that Detective Wolf was able to get, we know that's not the true story, that she actually waited for her for hours. And then through the follow-up interviews that he did as well with the employer, the victim's employer, we know that not only did they sit out there and wait for her, but they had actually called ahead to her employer to confirm that she was going to be, in fact, working that day. So that whole story of, you know, it just happened like an accident was completely blown apart.
You know, Scott, one of the things that people don't get, they'll read about or they'll hear the you reported on the news that this has happened, mm-hmm. and people think that's pretty simple. You know, it's a simple case. But what people don't get as they hear about this kind of a case is the number of hours that are necessary first for the police department to investigate this thing to make a case that will withstand a jury's scrutiny beyond a reasonable doubt, but also the hours and hours and hours of preparation that goes into it by prosecutors like Tracy and the victim's advocate like Mary Houlihan. Mary, so tell us what happens with you and the victims as the victim's advocate in this case to deal with this victim.
Well, Tracy and I were, of course, both struck by the violence of this assault and by everything that had happened. It had gotten some media attention, so as often as the case, you hear about a case before it actually hits your desk. But then when we met with the victim, I think we were both, it pulled at both our maternal instincts in that she's a young, tiny, 18-year-old girl who her family had moved here from Burma and had just moved out of state before this happened. So she was a young college student kind of without a support system. And I think we both felt like we just wanted to be as much of a support system as we could, because these are hard cases for any kind of victim. But you talk about a young victim that's never experienced the criminal justice system, that doesn't have a family around her to kind of give her that support. So we met with her a number of times throughout this and tried to make sure that we were, you know, taking extra care to explain this process and keep her also aware of, unfortunately, the downsides of these things. So, you know, we don't know for sure exactly what a defendant is going to say, but it's an easy guess initially that somehow it's going to be blaming the victim. And that's all cases. That's not just this kind of direct case. But so we work with her. We're supporting her.
Well, tell us a little bit about her. Because there was a reason they tried to cut her face up.
Well, you know, social media is big with the young people and some of the older people. And what we found out was that our young victim had been dating a fellow that certainly has his own giant basket of issues, but she knew he had a child with somebody previously. She had no idea that they were still involved or that he was kind of telling stories across town to different women. But she, when they learned of each other through social media and saw pictures of this guy with our, as I always called him, Good Nicole, because they're both named Nicole, so it was for me, Good Nicole and Bad Nicole, to keep things straight. When this ex-girlfriend or mother of his children saw pictures of them together, they engaged in some back and forth communication. This was November before the assault occurred. The communication got rough enough that our Nicole changed her phone number, realized I'm in over my head, stopped communication, broke up with the boy. All good decisions, but not enough to prevent this assault. So this, to her, came out of nowhere. And, you know, it's very interesting to realize that one of the other things that we saw when we met our Nicole was that she's beautiful. These razor cuts had healed beautifully. That actually is a huge complication for a prosecutor to have to deal with, to realize that we're going to have to be putting in front of a jury a beautiful woman that doesn't look like she went through what she went through. And so we started orienting her towards, this is not, you know, a slam dunk. This is going to have issues. They're going to bring into any consideration of trial some of the back and forth that did occur back in November. But really, the truth is, this is an innocent victim that got herself in a circumstance that you can imagine any 18-year-old that you know getting into because of making some choices that maybe parents don't love. And then this happened, which should have never happened and could really change her likelihood of becoming a model.
Mary Houlihan is with us, Commonwealth's Attorney Ray Larson, Tracy Kinnear, Detective Franz Wolf. We will continue talking about this case after we get you caught up on what else is happening in the world. Can't quite understand, because never would any women argue over me. And if they did, it would be, you take it. No, you take it. No, you take it. I can't imagine getting into a situation like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've been there and done that, too. Tracy, what was this... what was this woman charged with, and tell us how the case proceeded once you all presented it to the grand jury?
Well, it was charged as assault in the first degree. And
what does that mean?
Well, you can be charged with assault in the first degree from two different angles. One can be if you cause a serious physical injury with a deadly weapon, which obviously a razor blade would be. But we didn't have actual proof of that. You could tell from the cuts that obviously it was something more than just, you know, a ring, which is actually what the defendant ended up claiming, which was ridiculous because they were deep cuts and they were very clean, bladed cuts. But the only way we actually knew what instrument she had really used was that Detective Wolf and I had an opportunity that you don't often get in cases, in that her attorney asked to sit down and speak with us prior to this case going to the grand jury. And I think that their goal in doing that was to try to talk us down out of this assault first charge and how we even presented it to the grand jury. At that time, though, the injuries were still so severe that no matter what she said, we were proceeding on assault in the first degree. In that discussion, though, she did admit to us that she had used a razor blade. Now, we couldn't use that against her because that was a pretrial discussion, but at least we had that information. The thing that ended up being a real issue in the case, though...
Now, wait a minute. That's interesting. So the defendant in this case gave, kind of had a conversation with you all in which she admitted that it was a razor blade. And you're telling the listeners you can't use that information she gave you against her at trial. And then you just casually said this was in a pretrial negotiation of some sort. Mm-hmm. What the world is that all about?
Well, like I said, it's something that doesn't happen often. Defendants don't usually subject themselves to talking to the prosecutor outside of, well, their attorney was there, but outside of the normal communications that are post-grand jury. In a pretrial discussion like that, anything that she says, we agree from the beginning, is not able to be used against her. But she is trying, or she was trying, to act like she was being honest and forthright in the hope that we would be sympathetic to her and that we would, I guess, proceed differently. It actually had the opposite effect on me. It made me want to proceed with assault first more than ever, because while she acted like she was being forthright, there were still a lot of lies in what she was telling us. So
she was charged with assault in the first degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did the case proceed?
Well, the thing that ultimately ended up changing as over the time of the case, the defendant dragged this case out quite a bit. She had a private attorney for some months that kept continuing the case. Finally, when he was basically telling her she had no option except to plead guilty, she fired him. And then she got a public defender, which then basically started the case all over again at square one, with having to provide discovery and bring that attorney up to speed.
Okay, Mary, now you tell us the impact of continuance after continuance of a case on the victim.
Well, the interesting thing during all of this time that's passing, and again, remembering social media was part of this initially, and this is what these kids are doing. All during this defendant, while she was arrested, she didn't spend but a few hours in jail before she bonded out. The male in question bonded her out. But because she was out, that means I've got a victim that's very understandably fearful all the time. And she was being contacted by through different Facebook or Twitter, where it was probably clearly a false account, but you can't always prove those things. And so then she'd contact me, being really scared that somebody's going to do something. And there's, you know, the general public is feeling like those are all things you can act on. The reality is they very often aren't, because if you can't prove that it was done by this defendant, then there's not going to be action that the court can take. So during the entire time that this case went on, there was a lot of reason for the victim to remain in fear the entire time. And so that's kind of my role in it, was to try and help her understand the things she can do for her own protection, and also to try and keep record of these different ways that we felt like that the defendant was trying to keep her in fear.
We need to get to a break, but before we do, Walker's on the phone. Walker, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Hey, Ray, how's it going?
Just fine. This is Walker Webb. He was a longtime police officer and detective, homicide detective.
And, tell Franz, he is not the ugliest guy in the department, regardless of what they say. but what I wanted to pass on, I just ask, you remember a couple of years ago, we didn't have Twitter, none of that social media. There was a case here, a young lady was disfigured severely. And I'm curious because I see her at least once or twice a week. And it didn't involve over a man. It was because she couldn't sing. The suspect didn't like the way she sung, and she took some sort of cleaner and threw it in her face. Do you recall that?
Sure.
I was just wondering. I don't know where that person is, and I knew her also. I don't know where she is. Did she ever make parole? Is she out? Was the victim contacted as to where this individual is? And did you ever appear at any of the proceedings to give her a little more time to think about her actions?
Well, what you're talking about is a woman who whose face is severely disfigured as a result of this. I think acid attack was thrown on her, and because she was singing in the choir, and the woman in the choir didn't like the way she was carrying the tune or not carrying the tune, and this is what she got. You know, Walker, I'll have to check and see what the status of that is, and I will.
Okay.
And I'll mention it next week.
I appreciate it, Ray.
Okay.
Tell Franz to hang in there. He's good. He's doing his job.
Thanks, Walker.
Okay.
Commonwealth's Attorney Ray Larson is with us. So is Franz Wolf from the Lexington Police Department, Mary Houlihan, Tracy Kinnear from the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office. We will wrap up this case and this hour next here on News Talk 590 WBLK. We're today, Scott Johnson in for Jack Patty, and we literally have about 2 minutes. Tracy Kinnear, can you wrap up the case in 2 minutes?
Sure. The biggest issue for us as the case dragged on, though, was the fact that the victim's injuries healed. And in the big picture, that's the most important thing, because she will be able to continue on potentially with a modeling career. But for the case, it meant that I no longer had a serious physical injury. So ultimately, we had to amend the charge to assault in the second degree, recommend a sentence of 5 years. I'm sorry, assault first degree under extreme emotional disturbance. But it brought it down a notch from 10 to 20 to 5 to 10. And she was sentenced to 5 years to serve. And the best part about that was she tried to play the sympathy factor with a judge. She tried to manipulate him about this false pregnancy, I believe was false. We never received proof about it as well, and it didn't work. He gave her one opportunity to tell the truth. What did she use to cut her face? And she maintained the ring story, and I think that sunk her. So he sentenced her to prison.
All right.
She also dared to look out and say that look at the victim. She got over it. She's fine now. During sentencing, and I think that was it.
Ooh.
And Judge Ishmael sent her to serve.
Yeah, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. All right, everybody, we've got about 30 seconds here to say thanks. Ray?
If you want to keep up all of the people that participated in this, as well as the injuries to the victim and how she looks now, a remarkable recovery, thank goodness, go to Ray the DA Lex on Instagram, because Christy McStay's been doing a great job keeping up with the story.
And we saw some of that last week when you guys were in. You I hate to give you credit, but yeah, you do a good job with this. Ray Larson, Tracy Kinnear, Houlihan.
Houlihan's and Frank.
Franz Wolf and Frank over there. All you guys, thanks for coming in. Everybody stick around. We got Joe B and Denny on 101.5. Live with Lee here on 590, and then we all come back together at noon for Cruiser and Crew. My name's Scott Johnson. I'll be back in for Jack Monday morning here on News Talk 590 WVLK.
News Talk 590.